The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles principally from the Harvard Health Letter. This is the April 2024 issue of the Harvard Health Letter. And the first article is called Pill-Free Pain Treatments That Won't Break the Bank. Many alternative therapies to relieve pain are free or low cost. One of the most effective elixirs for chronic pain is a total freebie. You can administer it at home at any time in any manner you choose. This bargain treatment is exercise, yet not everyone takes advantage of its many pain-relieving benefits. A recent CDC study found that 1 in 4 adults relies exclusively on over-the-counter or prescription painkillers to treat chronic pain, despite recommendation to use pill-free alternatives. Some people feel there's no care given unless they end up with a prescription, or they have barriers to drug-free therapies, including cost, lack of knowledge, and poor access to care. But many treatments are free or low-cost and easily accessible, says Dr. Jennifer Kurz, a physiatrist who specializes in alternative pain management strategies at Harvard-affiliated Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital. Many strategies that reduce pain are activities that support a healthy lifestyle. Take exercise, for example. While it is sometimes difficult to exercise if you are in pain, it also can bring relief. It strengthens and loosens your muscle, reduces stress, promotes weight control, and helps improve mood and sleep. All of those work together to relieve pain, Dr. Kurz says. Other activities that help relieve pain include yoga, stretching, tai chi, deep breathing, mindfulness meditation, stress management, sleeping 7 to 9 hours per night, and staying socially connected. Here are free or very low-cost ways to help you practice them. Online videos. YouTube has thousands of free videos that relate to these methods of pain reduction. For example, you can find videos of exercise routines for chronic pain, ways to improve sleep, and meditation for beginners. Make sure the instructor in the video is certified in his or her field. Or search for videos on the websites of large hospitals and nonprofit groups you trust. The next is apps. Health apps for chronic pain can guide you to meditate, exercise, and more. Look for apps that are free or have a small fee per month, have good reviews, don't collect too much information from you, and have hundreds of thousands or millions of downloads. Examples include Curable, C-U-R-A-B-L-E, Manage My Pain, Migraine Buddy, Better Sleep, and Insight Timer Calm, C-A-L-M, or Headspace. Health Club Memberships. Some health insurance plans, including some Medicare Advantage and Medigap plans, include a free fitness membership called Silver Sneakers. It gives you access to 14,000 fitness and recreation clubs across the country. You might even strike up conversations with other exercisers, which is great for staying socially connected. Online lectures or classes. Large hospitals, academic research centers, and nonprofit organizations frequently offer free or low-cost lectures or classes related to chronic pain treatment. For example, Dr. Kurz founded a pain management program called Finer, F-I-N-E-R, which features free lectures from Harvard-affiliated physiatrists, physical therapists, and pain psychologists. It also has videos and links to helpful apps, books, podcasts, and more on its website. And that website is www.finerprogram.org. Support groups. Support groups for chronic pain promote social connection and feeling of hope and control. Look for online groups on Facebook. Search chronic pain support, or through large nonprofit chronic pain associations like the U.S. Pain Foundation's Pain Connection. That's at www.painconnection.org. Or join a local in-person support group. Your local hospital can probably help you with that. If you can afford to spend money on drug strategies to treat pain, be careful. Many are bogus. But the following are safe, effective, and reasonably priced. Physical therapy is the number one treatment for pain reduction, and it involves working with a therapist to assess your physical strengths and weaknesses and designs a customized program that includes exercise and other therapies. It's covered under most insurance plans, although you'll have to make co-pays. Otherwise, physical therapy costs about $100 to $200 per session. Dietitian services. A dietitian can design a balanced eating plan to help you lose weight and eliminate many inflammatory foods in your diet. That might help you reduce fat and chronic inflammation, which will have an effect on your mood, your sensitivity to pain, and your overall health, Dr. Kurz says. The average cost for a dietitian is $100 to $200 per session, and you may only need a few visits. Insurance might cover a portion of the cost. Acupuncture. This ancient Chinese practice involves inserting hair-thin needles into nerve junctions. It doesn't work for everyone, but we know it's safe. It's covered by Medicare and many other insurance plans for common chronic pain diagnoses, like back pain, if the practitioner is a medical doctor. Otherwise, an average session costs about $100. Then there's massage. Therapeutic massage helps muscles, tendons, and joints. It relieves stress and anxiety, and it might interrupt pain messages to and from the brain. The average cost for a therapeutic massage is about $60 per hour. It is not covered by Medicare, but might be covered by other insurance plans. Also, you might want to join a particular health club, or perhaps a yoga, dance, or martial arts studio. Membership typically costs about $100 or more per month. Finally, there's talk therapy. There are many approaches to cope with emotional and psychological sides of pain, such as cognitive behavioral therapy, which redirects negative thoughts about pain, mindfulness-based psychologies, which help you focus on the present, and pain reprocessing therapy, which helps the brain unlearn the response to chronic pain. You can find free lectures for these online, but if you'd like to work with a therapist, it will cost $100 to $200 per hour. Insurance doesn't always cover visits. Each therapy works in a different way, Dr. Kurz says, but they'll all help you change your relationship with pain, which is essential for feeling better. Now here's another interesting section of the Harvard Health Letter, again of April 2024, and it's called Ask the Doctor with Dr. Anthony L. Komaroff, who's the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Health Letter. Question. For my whole life, it seemed that life expectancy in the United States kept getting longer. Now I hear it's getting shorter. What is happening? And Dr. Komaroff responds, during the 20th century, life expectancy in the United States increased dramatically. It may be hard to believe, but in 1900, life expectancy in the country was only 50 years. By 2019, it had risen to nearly 79. From 2020 to 2022, life expectancy did start to drop. The COVID pandemic was one important reason. Then in 2023, it started to rise again. The rise in U.S. life expectancy did not occur equally in all people, however. For example, life expectancy in Native Americans is more than 10 years shorter than for the average person in the United States, and life expectancy for men is 6 years shorter than it is for women. Another way of looking at how we're doing is to compare our life expectancy to that of other wealthy nations. A study published by the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine in the June 2023 issue of PNAS Nexus found that between the 1930s and the mid-1980s, United States life expectancy was generally longer than in other wealthy nations. We were not only doing better compared to our own past, we were also doing better than our peers. But since the mid-1980s, we've been doing progressively and dramatically worse. For example, if the United States had done as well as other wealthy nations, from 1980 through 2019, we would have lost 335 million fewer years of life. And during 2020 and 2021, 2.1 million fewer people would have died. Compared to other wealthy nations, the United States is falling behind in other health measures like maternal mortality and infant mortality. Why is the country with arguably the most advanced medical technology in the world, much of it invented here, falling behind when it comes to life expectancy? For one thing, we don't make healthcare as widely available to all of our people, as do other wealthy countries. Tens of millions of Americans still have no health insurance. Perhaps even more important, a nation's health is not only determined by the abundance of its medical technology, it's also determined by people's lifestyle and financial circumstances, and by the investments made by their society in things that affect health, like controlling air and water pollution, creating parks and playgrounds, and providing support for healthy nutrition, child care, and addiction treatment. After the turn of the 20th century, the United States led the world in progressively increasing life expectancy. Since the 1980s, we have been increasingly losing ground. As a society, will we try to do something about this? Do we care? And if so, how much? Now, here's an interesting article, again in the Harvard Health Letter of April 2024, that is called What to Do About Medical Gaslighting. If you feel like your doctor is dismissing your health concerns, you may be experiencing medical gaslighting. The term gaslighting is usually applied to personal relationships, when a partner's manipulation causes you to doubt your mental capacity, your ideas and feelings. But in recent years, gaslighting has been recognized in medical settings too. Medical gaslighting occurs when healthcare professionals seem to invalidate or ignore your concerns. It can be linked to misdiagnosis, delayed treatment, and poor health outcomes. It might damage your trust in the healthcare system and make you less likely to seek care. Why does gaslighting occur? It can be unintentional. The healthcare provider might have poor communication skills or have limited time to speak with the patient or not be medically knowledgeable enough to know what to do, says Dr. Jonathan M. Marin, a physician and director of clinical ethics at the Harvard Medical School Center for Bioethics. Medical gaslighting might also stem from having an illness that isn't well understood, like long COVID. Gaslighting might also occur when someone has a disorder that doesn't have a straightforward test for diagnosis. And it's possible that if the doctor is puzzled by a person's symptoms and bothered by that, the doctor might react by saying the person's symptoms are unimportant, reflecting their own uncertainty or insecurity. And unfortunately, medical gaslighting also can result from conscious or unconscious bias. We know there's a significant amount of unconscious bias in this practice of medicine. Studies show that those from marginalized groups, especially women and people of color, are more likely to have their concerns or questions not taken seriously, which can be associated with worse health outcomes, Dr. Marin says. To avoid medical gaslighting, Dr. Marin advises going to an appointment prepared as possible. You might want to think about bringing along a journal tracking the symptoms you've been having, a brief and precise expression of your medical concerns, a short list of questions for the doctor, and a buddy who can support you, take notes, and observe your interactions with the clinician. At the start of the appointment, tell the clinician you have a short list of questions you'd like to ask at the end of the appointment. If you don't know what to ask, you could try, "If you were in my shoes, what should I be asking right now?" Don't leave without understanding the big picture plan and the next steps. Dr. Marin says one challenge of medical gaslighting is that most clinicians probably don't feel they do it. That makes for tricky ground if you perceive that you're being gaslighted. How can you cope in the moment? Take a step back. Maybe there's a misunderstanding between you and the clinician. It's okay to say that and then reframe your question or request and see if it garners a different response. Perhaps a friend can advocate for you and lend credibility to what you're saying or asking the clinician. Prepare for some discord. If the appointment seems to be going south, it's okay to know your concerns. Calling out gaslighting is reasonable, but understand that it may not be the most comfortable conversation. Some clinicians might feel they're being attacked. Be clear that's not your intent, Dr. Marin says. If you and the clinician can't reach a resolution, it might be a good idea to move on. You deserve better treatment. Everyone has the right to change clinicians or get a second opinion, Dr. Marin says. The more you and your family members are aware of it and feel empowered, the less likely it will be to have a negative impact on you. And there's a short section attached, which is called Tips to Spot Medical Gaslighting. Sometimes it's hard to catch medical gaslighting as it's happening, especially if the clinician behavior is subtle, or if you're feeling sick or stressed. Red flags include a healthcare provider who doesn't listen or interrupts you, diminishes your symptoms, blames your symptoms on your age, your gender, your weight, your lifestyle habits, or your sexual orientation, says your symptoms probably are due to anxiety, depression, or stress, rushes you through an examination and appointment. A classic example is a 70-year-old who is worried about having more than usual body aches and low energy, whose clinician says, "Oh, it's just probably aging," without ordering any tests. Now, here are some interesting brief articles in a section called News Briefs. Again, we're with the Harvard Health Letter of April 2024. And the first article is, hearing aid use is linked to longer life. Hearing loss is a known risk factor for premature death. So will using hearing aids improve your longevity? Previous studies on the subject have been mixed, but new evidence published in the January 2024 issue of The Lancet Healthy Longevity offers hope. Researchers evaluated the hearing test results and questionnaire answers of 9,900 people, average age 49 when the study began, who were followed for more than 10 years. After adjustments for participants' age, race, gender, level of hearing loss, medical history, socioeconomic status, other medical conditions, and type of insurance, the risk of premature death was 24% lower among people who used hearing aids regularly compared with people who never used hearing aids. The study was observational and doesn't prove definitely that hearing aids protect people from early death. We'll need more evidence for that. But we know that hearing aids can help people hear conversations again, which may help ward off loneliness and social isolation, two risk factors for many chronic diseases. If you haven't been hearing as well lately, or at least if that's what your family is telling you, it's best not to put off a hearing aid. Then the next section is called, Could This Diet Ward Off COVID? A study published online January 9, 2024 by BMJ Nutrition Prevention and Health suggests that following a vegetarian or plant-based diet, higher in vegetables, legumes, and nuts, lower in dairy foods and meat, is tied to lower risk of getting COVID-19. Researchers evaluated the self-reported information of more than 700 people in Brazil who were surveyed in 2022 about their health, their medical history, and their diet. About 400 of these people said that they regularly consumed meat. About 300 said they ate a plant-based diet. This might include some meat or a strict diet that excluded some or all animal products. Almost half the study participants reported having had COVID. But a plant-based diet was 39% less likely to be associated with a COVID infection compared with meat eaters. Researchers speculate that plant-based diets might offer some protection against the virus due to beneficial plant chemicals. While the evidence that plant-based diets protect against getting COVID-19 is not yet solid, it is clear that plant-based diets help to stave off many chronic diseases. And finally, in news briefs, two workout strategies reduce cardiovascular disease risk. Doing regular aerobic exercise, the kind that works your heart and lungs, is one of the best ways to reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease. Now, Findings published online January 17, 2024, by the European Heart Journal suggest that doing a combination of aerobics and strength training might reduce cardiovascular risk factors just as effectively. The study involved 400 people classified as overweight or obese who also had high blood pressure. They were randomly assigned to one of four exercise programs: a 60-minute aerobic workout three times a week, a 60-minute strength training workout three times a week, a 60-minute combination of aerobics and strength training, 30 minutes each, three times a week, or no exercise at all. After 1 year, people in both the aerobics-only group and the combination exercise group, but not the strength training-only group, had a significant reduction in a combined measure of cardiovascular risk factors compared with people who didn't exercise. These risk factors included blood pressure, LDL or bad cholesterol, blood sugar, and body fat. People doing the combined workout also improved their muscle strength. What this means, it might be equally helpful to replace half of your aerobic workout with strength training without adding additional exercise time. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.